Okay, COVID. We have to start, I'm this going to be like a structured as a series of probably like a mise en abyme, almost like it's going to go backwards and backwards. It's going to tell a story where you have to keep going back in time, further back, more flashbacks, a series of nested prologues. I'm going to try to avoid that, but I find that every time I try to explain what's going on, that's what happens. I'm going to say one other thing about trying it is that someone asks on Twitter, like, how do you talk to people who are hypnotized? My feeling is you can't talk to people who are hypnotized now. This is what I'm seeing. There's a certain the clerk class. It's like if you were trying to interrupt a child who was, their eyes were glued to the screen. Now they're watching Avatar, and you were trying to interrupt them in the middle of Avatar as it's nearing the next little mini, ecstasy in the narrative program that's cranking away, very scientifically working on their body and stuff. Almost like you're going to take a dog's dish away while it's eating. They're going to bite you. They're hooked. They're invested, they're very excited, they're extremely stimulated, and they're hooked into a narrative sequence that is in the middle of it. It's still building, and you can't interrupt them now. They're not rational. They will feel, they become very vicious and be counterproductive. The best thing is to use these people in the pedagogy to the other people who are the majority. In some places, like in the United States, they're not a really big majority, but it's a significant, more than enough to begin with. Also, because in the United States, as and other prosperous countries, the core of the resistance here are somewhat enfranchised people, some assets. The victim classes, the working class poor, the really precarious working class, which is very, very big in the United States. In Europe, the dynamic's a little different because there's still like a livable dole in a lot of places, healthcare, etc. In the United States, you have just large, but the resistance, the people who are leading the resistance, are the small business owners. So they're not, their backs are to the wall. They're not, compared to the ruling class, not very powerful, but they're not absolutely desperate. And they have a better grasp of how their real interests are being attacked than the clerk class. The clerk class are, they've always been the class that is the core fascist collaborators, the passionate fascists, the ones who sign up, put on the uniform, fall in love with it. But that class has changed a lot, and we'll talk. I'm going to talk a little bit about that, the significance of that, and how that's changing this program, which is a lot like the program of 100 years ago, but it's also different. So you can't so write those people off for now as audience, but they're objects. They're interesting objects. They're heuristic devices. To see how they are being manipulated and what they're doing. Okay, so this program, this being obviously is was long planned, and you could read in Jacob Levitch's articles about, you know, Bill Gates is long ago, you know, putting out there that population is a problem, that we have to use vaccines to depopulate, et cetera, et cetera. And I won't be surprised at all if what they do with these new RNA vaccines is, you know, massively vaccinate Africans and, if they can, people in the Middle East, and then say, oh, you know, because it's experimental vaccine, say, oh no, it seems like there's birth defects that are prevalent among people who are vaccinated due to the, you know, because it's a new type, it's not really a vaccine, even these RNA drugs that are supposed to stimulate antibodies are not actually vaccines, but that they'll say that, you know, we have to sterilize everyone now because there's a high incidence of birth defects from these vaccines. That's my guess of how far it's going to go. Meanwhile, there are other vaccines just for people who are going to have to, maybe have to take them. You know, there's the Sputnik, the Russian one, that seems to be an old-fashioned vaccine. But the Pfizer and the Moderna, and these are a new biotech, very, they seem to be being created in order to give a pretext for mass sterilization. Okay, I know that sounds like paranoid and wacky, but it's actually, since it's the main agenda of the sponsors of these vaccines and the whole ludicrous program, we can assume that, you know, they're working on that. That's their objective. Also, it's funny, like, talking to people, because this is also obvious now. Like, how could you cling to this idea that the ruling class means well and that they're bungling, blah, blah, blah. This is all so darn obvious. Everything that they're doing is so absurd. It is so much against what is supposed to be their own interests. You know, and there's no limit to the kind of lies they tell, to their contradictions, their switching. The only thing is that it's clear that there's some kind of dispute among the perpetrators. I would guess it has to do with how far they think they can go before they have a real rebellion on their hands. And, you know, they've taken huge risks because they've delegitimized property itself. They've delegitimized their rule. They've delegitimized the whole structure of liberal democracy that held the whole thing together. You know, they've shaken the snow globe, and they assume that everyone is very much in disarray and helpless, and that's true. And they've obviously gotten away with more than they expected this round, and they got greedy, right? They smell it, so they're going. You know, they could not have expected they would get away with this for a year. But it's also perilous for them. So I think that there are elements that want to consolidate the gains that they've made, which are enormous, rather than risk pushing people into open revolt and disobedience, and where they're delegitimizing their own, you know, apparatus, the constitution, and the constitutions of these countries, which is what they've, you know, that they've finger-posted that they're going there, that they're going to, you know, abolish the United States and rebuild something woke, you know. We could see why that would be it in on their video games. They might want to do that, but that's hugely risky. So somebody wants to do it. They want to prepare the possibility. They want to put that out there, Overton window, facts on the ground, ideological facts on the ground. But I don't think it seems like they're hesitating now to go for all of that. But, you know, that's the wokeness, the whole potential that you could, you know, abolish abolish the Constitution, really build something from scratch. And, you know, Naomi Klein, who's the worst person now, is just the biggest traitor, is the biggest scumbag. But her book was pretty good, Shock Doctrine, and that it created this term that people could understand. And so you could say, oh, there's that Shock Doctrine again. I remember what happened with the Haitian earthquake. You could say that, and people would suddenly be in the right frame of mind, you know, whereas if you tried to explain it in more Marxist language, they would often, like, the shutters would come down. So Shock Doctrine, it allowed people to know, to think that, to be comfortable with talking about the ruling class cunning and violence and greed and malice. You know, it sort of fits what's happening now especially the beginning of that book, where she talked about how they're inspired by this idea, you know, this bogus theory behind the electroshock treatments, that, you know, you could wipe the brain clean and wipe the personality out and rebuild it. And this is something that the Silicon Valley people, like Bill Gates and Omidyar and Bezos and all these people, they seem to believe, you know, they're extremists in the sense they believe that the spectacle is even more powerful than it really is, and that they can, you know, they can re-engineer the world from their keyboard. And we know they think this because of the Juan Guaido opposite effort, you know, sort of a test case. Could they actually have a coup in Venezuela that they just did totally on their keyboard in this spectacle? Like, they just said Guaido was the president of their spectacle Venezuela, you know, their screen Venezuela, and they turned over some of the abstract claims that exist only in these forms, right, to him, some of the abstract. They couldn't actually even get him to make him the signator of the Venezuelan treasury. And this operation failed. You can't just, they believe that you could change something on the screen and then the real world would have to follow suit, sort of thing. And they overestimated the power. The spectacle is very, very powerful. But they, in that case, they obviously overestimated it, and they may be overestimating now their plan that they can, you know, transform the entire world, rewrite the political system, rewrite, you know, humanity from their keyboards, with the backup of the constabulary, but nothing new, you know, with just the military that exists, the police that exist, that they can, you know, reboot. And reset is this term that they're using. And this is just propaganda. They don't want to reset the economy. This is a program that's been going on since the defeat of the Soviet Union. There's actually a continuation of the program that defeated the Soviet Union in the Cold War. And as I said in my Zizek panel some years ago at Left Forum, you know, this is what we're seeing now is the a climactic stage. It's an acceleration in final stages, the last enclosure, someone called it, in final stages of the program that began with the defeat of the Soviet Union immediately after the ruling class of the U.S. Empire, you know, went on a mission to reconquer the world. So they reversed the Chinese Revolution, actually just only partially, but then they reversed the Russian Revolution, other revolutions, and then now they're getting to 1789. Eventually, they have their eye on Magna Carta. They want to, you know, undo all of the achievements of the global freedom struggle, of humanity's struggle for freedom from class society, from overlords, exploiters. So now after the defeat of the Soviet Union, the target and the plunder of socialism, the target was the social democracies, democracy itself. Now, when the world communist movement was had the global hegemony ideologically, and its opposition, the ruling class, the proprietor classes of the capitalist world, were forced into a position of maintaining liberal democracies and liberal individualist credo and a system belief in the freedom, personal freedom, da da da. And that because of the dominance of communism, that was the baseline. You couldn't become more reactionary than that. That was the baseline consensus. Of course, there were reactionaries, but they were working within the conditions that the global consensus was that all self-government was the only legitimate government, individual rights, etc. And so this, as soon as they destroyed the Soviet Union, they turned their guns on this system of consensus, the Westphalian system, the UN Charter, systems of democratic rights, civil rights, and these baseline anti-fascism. And they had a new lease on life, in a way, the capitalist ruling class who started to transform itself, because when they defeated the Soviet Union, they plundered the socialist world with this enormous amount of money. And the plunder of the working classes of the socialist world and the treasuries and socialist countries in Africa, Eastern Europe, Asia, all this money went to Wall Street, and it financed what is known as, we call, the dot-com boom. And this was in the Clinton era, the massive upscale, the massive rollout of all these technologies that the military and Intel had been working on. They developed them, but it became the global, the whole spectacle being wrapped around the earth with the money from the plunder of socialism.